Podcasting from London, Ontario, Canada, this is The Lovers, The Dreamers, and You. An interview show where creative people talk about what inspires them to pursue their dreams and do what they love. And now, your host, Karis Thomas.
Welcome to The Lovers, The Dreamers, and You. I'm Karis Thomas, and your primary host for the show. With me today is my really good friend, Carrie Hishon, who is here to guest host today because the subject of our podcast is actually myself. And it's strange for me to interview myself. So I've asked Carrie here to do that. Carrie Hishon, fabulous actress, combat lady. What else do you want to say about yourself?
Oh, you've already said so many nice things. I do children's theater. I direct children's theater. And I like to... Oh, God, I suck already. Man!
Carrie Hishon. Sucky.
Crappy talker. Extraordinary.
Okay.
Okay, I'm going to start again.
Run a blog.
Yeah.
That kind of stuff.
Yeah, that's true.
So, Carrie, what do you want to ask me about today?
Yes, let's start with that. So, tell me about The Lovers, The Dreamers, and You. Where did it come from? What inspired you to start this podcast?
A lot of different things inspired me. I have, as many of my close friends know, been a Muppet fan for my entire existence. But in the last recent while, with the new film that came out, my enthusiasm for them was rekindled, and I discovered all of this wonderful work out there on the web and in print and in radio format or podcast format that really inspired me to express my thoughts and feelings and emotions about their medium and their creativity. But I wanted to slant it and bring it to my own skills and what I do in the creative world. And it took me a while to figure out exactly how I would do that. And eventually I came up with The Lovers, The Dreamers, and You.
So tell me more about the title, because obviously it's kind of, well, it's pulled from The Lovers, The Dreamers, and Me from Rainbow Connection. So what does that title mean to you and to the listeners?
Thanks. I like that question. obviously, the Rainbow Connection is that iconic song, that Muppeteer song that everybody goes to. It's one of probably their top five, if not the top number one that people would always think of. But at the end of the Muppet movie, when Kermit turns to us and says, you know, life's like a movie, write your own ending, he finishes off with The Lovers, The Dreamers, and You. So he's taken his whole adventure and everything he's done that was creative and bringing all these wonderful creatures together on this voyage, and he throws the challenge out to the audience. And I kind of thought that would be really cool to explore, because as a teacher and a director and a performer, I like to gather like-minded people around me, and I like to work with them and inspire them and have them in turn inspire me and then turn it around to the audience. So it's kind of like when that thought clicked in my brain, I thought, okay, I can talk to people about what they love, mm-hmm. which could be Muppets or might not, and what they dream about, which again could be Muppets or not. And then the you could be the person that I'm interviewing, or you, the audience who's listening. And I just thought it was a neat, I don't know, I guess the word's metaphor for what I wanted to explore.
It's so many layers. It's really cool.
Yeah.
So, okay, since we've got on to the topic of Muppets, I want to ask, what is your earliest Muppet memory, and what is it that draws you to the Muppets? What's special about them that makes you love them so much?
Crap. Okay, my earliest Muppet memory. No one has asked me that. I will admit to being on the planet the same amount of time as Sesame Street. So I'm sure some of my early memories have got to be that. My mom remembers turning it on and discovering it, and she remembers me watching it. So I'm certain that's got to be like an early memory that, you know, in my subconscious, if I could go in there and pull it out, that mm-hmm. I would be able to. But probably my earliest recollections of like cognitive actual recollecting would be the Muppet Show. Yeah. And while I adore Sesame Street, the Muppet Show is that perfect metaphor for my entire life, because it's everything about the chaos of my friends and the people who I work with creating something beautiful that the audience then somehow loves. And I love how on the Muppet Show you can see behind the scenes and all of the craziness that Kermit's going through or whomever is going through, and the audience somehow gets fooled by the performance that they put on. I distinctly remember seeing the Muppet movie in the movie theater with my brother. I remember that we were absolutely aghast when Kermit rode his bike down the street, which incidentally was not the first time that Kermit ever rode a bicycle. It was just the first time in a major motion picture. And we were just blown away. And I also remember going to see the Great Muppet Caper, where they come down in the balloon at the beginning. And they're looking at the credits, and Fozzie and Gonzo and Kermit are talking about the credits, and Gonzo just wants to jump out of the balloon and plummet to the earth.
Of course
and
he does.
Yeah. He's a chaos Muppet. And Fozzie just keeps looking at all of these credits and wondering, when are they going to be over? When are we going to start the movie? And then he turns to Kermit and he says, well, nobody reads those anyway. And Kermit says, sure they do. They all have families. And from that moment on, my brother and I insisted that we stay to watch and read all the credits to every movie ever since. And I learned that from Kermit. I don't remember how old I was. I was pretty young. So early Muppet memories, there's like a bunch right there. What makes them so special? I think I probably already answered that, in the sense that they represent, you know, my existence and what I go through every day. Especially, I like to think of things that Jim Henson said about keep it silly and really try to enjoy life, and that's what they do, and that's what I try to do. It's like a mantra. It's like yogi. I try to do it all the time. Doesn't mean I'm always successful, but that's them. How's that for an answer?
That's awesome. I have two more Muppety questions before I move on to talking about, you know, what you love and what you dream and what you are inspired by. I have to ask the prerequisite, which is your favorite Muppet?
Kermit.
Of course.
yeah, hands down. He runs a real close tie with Gonzo, though. Kermit, I adore when Kermit loses it, when he gets angry, when he fires Piggy, when he just freaks out on everybody else. I think that's hilarious. And I realize now that I'm older and more mature, that he's how I am when I freak out. I just friggin' lose it. So he makes me laugh, because I guess I'm recognizing myself. But Gonzo always makes me cry. Always. So those two guys together are like the front and the back of the coin for me. I can't have one without the other. But if you made me go to a desert island and only have one, that would be cruel. But I guess I'd have to take Kermit.
I feel like he'd be a good guy to have around. He'd help you get off, because he's so sensible.
Well, he can swim, so.
Oh, exactly.
He'd go for help.
Legs. Yeah.
Yeah.
And then my other Muppety question that I wanted to ask is, with the exception of Jim Henson, because he's going to be there anyway, what Muppeteer would you like to take out on a date and pick their brain?
Oh, my God. Well, the answer's the same. It's still Kermit and it's still Gonzo. It's still Steve Whitmire and Dave Gels. Steve Whitmire he's friggin' adorable. It's just ridiculous how cute he is and how much he still loves his job, even though I can't imagine what the pressures must be like to move from being a secondary player like he was and a supportive player to being the main center spoke
the
of the whole
frog.
Thing. Exactly. And then also he's taken over a number of other roles of other Muppeteers who've retired as well. So I can't imagine what that's like. And yet he still grins like a 5-year-old in pretty much every picture you ever see of him. But Dave Gels, being somebody who came from a building background. He actually didn't come from a performing background. He's an engineer. And he started out building puppets, and then he started out performing, and then he, you know, slowly, he has been known to say that it took him 8 years to feel comfortable as a performing Muppeteer. But to be somebody who has been there almost from the beginning, mm-hmm. The only guy left from the beginning is Frank Oz, and he's not doing it so much anymore. But I think Dave would be really fun to talk to. So I'd want to take them both out, frankly. And we'd need to end the date by singing together, one on either side of me.
That would be too cool.
Yeah.
And I think it's cool with Dave because I think it's kind of neat the way he combines like the science of building the puppets and being, you know, coming from a building background with the art and the performing. That's just kind of neat how that marries together.
Yeah. Yeah. He always, in some interviews and things like that I've read, he indicates how he felt nervous and he felt inadequate and he felt, but he's really forthcoming with sharing with the world his worries. And I really admire that in a person, someone who's willing to admit those kinds of things and then grow from it and share it with others, because it just helps other people realize, well, geez, I don't have to be perfect on the get-go, you know, right out of the starting block either.
That's something I can definitely learn from.
Yeah. Yeah, I seem to recall having to help you coach through insisting that you be perfect right away.
Of course, you know, I had to be as good a sword fighter as the people who've been studying for 10, 15 plus years on my first day.
Yeah, yeah, which is just unrealistic, right?
Well, that's why I'm going to go back to New York and do some more and learn some more and get even better.
Yeah, more adventures. It's great.
Exactly. So what I want to know now, what brought you to this point here? Because you wear so many hats in your career. You're an educator, you're a director, you're a performer, you're a singer, you're a Muppet lover, you're a producer, you've designed costumes, you've done it all, it seems like.
Thanks.
Well, I just can't believe all the stuff you have accomplished. So how did you get here? Is my first part of the question. I guess once you answer that, I'll go on to my next part of that.
Okay. So how did I get to Luke's house recording this?
Yes, exactly. Okay. Well, other than, you know, driving down Oxford Street.
to make this decision, or like the adventure I took as a performer to become who I am now?
Yeah, that's what I'm
more that
about.
Part.
Yeah.
Okay.
Because you're not originally from London.
No. I'm from Red Deer, Alberta. And my parents are from Great Britain. They're from Wales, and they're both teachers, and they were married in Great Britain, and they decided to get the heck out of there because they wanted to make a new and different and vibrant change in their lives. And they moved to Canada and eventually wound up in Red Deer. And I actually should ask them sometime what led them to being involved in local theater, but they got heavily involved in local theater in Red Deer. And London is extremely vibrant and there's tons going on. But in the 70s in Red Deer, Alberta, there were like two companies. And one of them being Central Alberta Theatre. And at a certain point in their run with Central Alberta Theatre, my dad was the president. My mom would direct. She'd build costumes. He'd produce. He'd star in. She'd star in. My brother would do lights. The first show I was ever in, the whole family was in it, and that was Carousel. And the first show I ever saw, my dad was in it, which was Fiddler on the Roof, that you and I worked on just a few months ago.
And then weren't you in a production of Fiddler on the Roof with your father as well?
No, my dad came to see that.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so Fiddler has touched my life directly three times. When my dad was in it, and I watched it, went, wow, if Daddy can do that, then I can do that.
And then I did do that.
and then we've since mounted it with kids. You directed and I choreographed. So that's where it all started. That was the inkling of stuff. And I'm incredibly lucky that I have parents who consistently and regularly and still say to me, you can do anything you want. Just go do it. And it might take practice. And don't let anybody tell you no. So I did lots of theater there. And then I started a theater program in Rendrye College. And then I switched to the music program. And then my travels took me to Victoria, BC. And then my travels took me to Toronto. And then I decided, what are all these travels? And this is nonsense. I need to go back to school. And I did my BFA in dance at York University. And I figured I'd need to be sensible at the same time. And that's when I did my B.Ed. And then I started teaching, and you know, it went like that. Now, of course, I'm doing all this research on Muppeteers and people like Kevin Clash and Steve Whitmire, who didn't bother going to school at all. They, before they were even done high school, Frank Oz, before they were even done, they were already working for Jim Henson. But that was a different time period. and to get to work for them now is a lot more difficult.
it's just different. Yeah, it's a totally different time.
Yeah. So.
And
had I known I could run away and join the Fraggles, you know, in those early days when they were in Toronto, had I realized they were in Toronto, I probably would have got on a bus.
Life would be very different then.
yeah. So no regrets.
Yeah.
So that was part one.
That's part one. So the second part is, so you have done a lot. You've done so many different positions and different roles within the theater community, both here in London and in Alberta. Where do you want to go from here? What are some of your goals and things you aspire to do, both maybe short-term and long-term?
I've always wanted to record a CD. I don't know if that's ever going to happen, but the more I direct and the more I get involved in sort of the, shall we say, upper levels of stuff, the more I see myself moving away from being my own creative person and expressing my own stuff. Although directing is my own creativity, it's not the same. Mm-hmm. And so that's part of why I kind of wanted to do this. Mm-hmm. It's a little challenge for myself. Where do I want to go with this? Well, I'd like, when I'm retired from teaching, I'd like to be able to retire earlier because I had something else interesting and fascinating to do. Mm-hmm. I have no idea if that will happen or not. So if I don't take a risk and try crazy things like this, then I'll never know, right?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah, it just kind of pushes you outside of your comfort zone.
Yeah. Yeah, that was entirely the point of this. You know, not that I'm comfortable as a director, not that I think I'm the best director around and that I can't grow and can't learn. I definitely want to do more of that and more growing in those areas. But because I'm not regularly singing and regularly performing, I wanted to find something else that would push those buttons. So, yeah.
Cool.
Luke can edit out this dead space.
I know, because now I'm thinking. We did that.
How many minutes are we at?
20.
Cool.
That's not bad.
Just a few more.
Yeah.
What else should she ask, Luke?
I don't know.
What do you think?
What else do we need to know about?
Is there anything on the post-its that intrigues you? That you haven't already done.
What do you like about doing the combat side of, like, because you obviously are extremely interested in combat when you're doing a lot of your shows. They have a lot of combat, and you married a guy with a bunch of swords. So what brought you to that point in your life?
Okay, first let me correct that I did not marry a guy with a bunch of swords. I married a guy who I did not know liked swords and who has since acquired swords through my funding. So let's just make that very clear.
So they're your swords. That's what
they're my
saying.
Swords. Okay. Oh, yeah. Oh, okay. Yeah. They're my swords.
And also prop firearms and shields.
Yeah. That's my cannon on the front porch. That's my cannon. No, he designed it and he built it. I mean, he's got a creative outlet that's just insane. And he can think in a three-dimensional way that boggles my brain. I can think three-dimensionally with people on stage and moving them around and that sort of thing, but he can think three-dimensionally with inanimate objects and how he's going to turn them into something else. And I would like to develop that skill myself.
That would be very useful for puppeteering and muppeteering.
Right. Sure, you know, I mean, and that's the other sort of push for me is that I got pulled into the combat world by Brock because he really wanted to go and do some serious studying, but he really wanted to have a regular partner. And these are the days before Buffy, before Xena. None of these shows were on the air. So when he asked me if I would go and be his partner, I kind of rolled my eyes at him and said, girls don't do that, do they? Like, when is there a call for, you know, tough women in plays, right? Because there are less in place. Mm-hmm. There are becoming more, but there are less. And now, of course, that people will gender bend in a Shakespeare and stuff, there's more. But people hadn't done that yet. Or if they had, nobody near us mm-hmm. had done it. And the very first thing that we went to attend was the Patty Crane workshop in Niagara-on-the-Lake.
Oh.
Long before it was in Banff. Long time before it was in Banff. I think we were at the second one. And it was only a weekend. Mm-hmm. And we couldn't even go the whole weekend. And Patty was there. Because he was still alive. And Brock knew Patty. And we arrive there second half of the weekend and we go into the workshop, the first one that we're going to attend, and it's a sword and buckler dance workshop. And I'm in the middle of my dance degree at York University, and I'm like, you're kidding me. I can do this. Sure. Give me a sword. Give me a buckler. Yeah, no problem. And all the rest of the people in that particular workshop had spent the previous day, 2 hours or something, pre-learning everything, and this was part two. And I picked it up really fast. And they were pretty angry with me for picking it up fast. And then when I explained I was doing my BFA in dance, then they kind of forgave me because they weren't dancers. But I was like, oh, it's the same thing. Mm-hmm. Oh, my gosh, that's awesome. So then after that, I was like, yeah, sure. Who do you want to go study with? Let's go. Let's study. And then we got his sword. And then I was jealous and I wanted a sword for myself. but I bought a dagger first because I couldn't afford a sword. And then I got a sword, and then we got more swords, and then it exploded into our wall of doom that has closets with bursting swords falling out of it.
So. And drawers across the bottom that have more stuff uh-huh. in there.
uh-huh. Yeah, yeah. And he's always wanting more things, always. Which is okay, because at least they're useful.
Yeah, it just increases the business.
mm-hmm. Well, and they're fun toys.
And the thing about dance and combat, I mean, it's both storytelling through movement, so it just kind of goes together.
Yes, and that's for me, that's the link with the puppetry thing as well. Mm-hmm. It's like how, for stage combat, how can you tell the entire story with a stick in your hand or a sharp pointy object in your hand or nothing in your hand, just a hank of somebody's hair? Mm-hmm. And dance, how can you tell the whole story without any dialogue, maybe without even music? And with puppetry, how can you tell the whole story and convey all of those amazing emotions with just your hand and a piece of felt? And working with that with my students is really fun because when they're first starting out, they're really inhibited and they're not willing to use all parts of their body. So when you get them to focus on just their hand, mm-hmm. they actually will produce a better story and produce more interesting and characters and take greater risks because they haven't had to focus on their entire body head to toe. So that's kind of why I like it. Also, if Brock ever says, you know, you can't buy another Muppet item, then I'll say, then you can't buy another sword. and then we'll have a stalemate. So.
And then the battle will be on.
Yeah. yeah. Fur against foils. Not good.
I was going to say, I don't even want to know how that's going to end up.
Yeah. So long as I have animal on my side, I'm okay.
Oh, it's perfect.
Yeah.
That's, oh my gosh, that's funny.
Anything else?
Animal would just start beating things with his drumsticks and every other part of him.
Yep.
beat swords.
Luke has to edit all this out.
I know.
Yes. yes. Don't shake your head at me.
Please don't make me sound like an idiot on the internet. I can do that myself quite well.
well, while we're here and we have Carrie here, Carrie's going to be like a guest host too. Why don't we ask her about your blog? And
Ooh, yes. Oh, yeah. And your upcoming adventures, which we've alluded to.
My upcoming adventures, yes. I do run a blog. My blog is just entitled my name. It's Carrie Hishon. muppets.wordpress.com.
Keep it simple.
Exactly. Right. Easy to remember that way. And I started writing the blog mostly about my theater adventures because I'm still fairly new to the London theater scene. I only really started in 2009 here in London because I've been traveling a lot. I lived in Stratford, and then I lived in Kingston, and then I lived in Florida working for Disney for a while. Mm-hmm. Came back, left, came back. So once I settled here in London, I really wanted a way to get involved in theater again because that's what I went to school for. I went to Queen's University for mm-hmm. stage and screen studies, and I really missed doing theater. So I literally went to the yellow pages in the phone book. Does anybody even use like a phone book anymore?
No, not anymore. 2009, obviously they did.
Oh, I guess so, even though, yeah. Anyway.
It's only 3 years ago, but
I know. But I went through the phone book and I went to the yellow pages. And I looked up theaters, and the first thing that came up was the Palace Theater. So I called them and I said, hey, do you need any volunteers? And they said, yes, we do. You can work for the Light Program, which is London Youth Theatre Education.
Right.
Which is their youth theatre program. And I started working there. I was a volunteer as an assistant stage manager. And then the next year I came back and was hired on as production manager. And then the year after that I was hired on to direct the program, which was fantastic. So
and was the year I met you.
Yeah, that's the year we met because Karis cast me in an amazing show that is probably the highlight of my theater career.
I hope not. I hope we'll get some more.
Well,
maybe to date.
Okay. Yes, to date.
I'll take that.
The Three Musketeers, in which I played Sabine, and it was amazing. One of the first times I'd done combat, not the first, because I did a little bit of stage combat actually back in Stratford in 8th grade The Taming of the Shrew.
Cool.
I was Bianca, and I had a fight with the girl who played Catherine, and since it was Western themed, our weapon was a horse whip, which was just hilarious.
Make sure you tell Doc about that. He'll love that.
I'll have to, yeah. Yeah. Anyway, going back to the present time. Yes.
Back to the future. Another obsession.
Karis and I met doing Three Musketeers, which was an incredible experience. It was so much fun. And I became a monster, as she so puts it,
yep.
Or an animal.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah.
See how I went to sit? Yes. See what I did there? Yeah.
Nice. That was good. Yeah.
When it came to sword fighting and combat, and so I went to the, with Karis and Brock, I went to New York City to the Art of Combat New York City Intensive last year for the first time for a week in July of 2011, where I trained with various fight directors from around the world, Michigan. And
well, internationally renowned fight directors.
From Michigan and New York City and Australia.
Yeah.
And it was just an incredible experience. And I'm going back tomorrow to do a second workshop.
So as terrible and as taxing as it was, because it was a tough week,
it was,
you're up for some more punishment.
Definitely. It was hard. It kicked the you-know-what out of me.
Mm-hmm. It's the internet. You can say whatever you want.
My first day I got there, I was so intimidated because there's all these people there that I'd never met. And literally you walk in the door and it's nice to meet you. Partner up. Let's start grappling. So you really get to know everybody very quickly.
Yeah. Well, there's the room is filled with testosterone.
It's really...
Which isn't a bad thing. It's just something that there is no balance. It's 100,000%.
Very much male dominated. There were a few girls there, but not very many.
Well, it doesn't matter. We're all putting out testosterone. Even if we're female, we're putting it on for that event.
Because
that's what it's about.
And my first day there was hard. I was put into a scene where we were doing, the weapon was small sword. And I had never done small sword work ever. And it's a very precise weapon.
And advanced.
Yeah.
Very advanced.
And the first day, our fight director, Carl, had to teach myself and Tobin, my scene partner, how to use the small sword and how to maneuver it and how to make it look good and
mm-hmm.
what actually to do with it. And then I go downstairs and I look at some of the other scenes that are being choreographed and watching them be done and thinking, oh my God, I suck. Oh my God, why am I even here? Karis, I should just go home. I have no business being here.
It was all your perception because none of them were done.
Well, that's
what people do to themselves. Yeah. And again, to go full circle, that's kind of why we like people like Dave Goals, because, you know, they'll admit when they're having a hard time and yet still keep plugging. So, and that this is what you're demonstrating by going back tomorrow to take more of this punishment.
And I'm so excited for it, because throughout the week, that's the thing too. Everybody was so nice and so helpful and so supportive. And that's one of the wonderful things about combat in particular, because you have to be so aware of yourself and your partner. You have to take care of your partner. Mm-hmm. And I find that the fighters that I was working with really do care about each other. They make bonds and friendships because, you know, you're putting yourself at risk doing some of these things. One of the actors from Australia just, I don't even know how this happened. He stood up. He went through this whole long
massive fight scene,
turned around, made a quick turn and fell and sprained his ankle.
Yep. Right before a show.
And it's amazing. Like, things can just happen in the blink of an eye, but it's such a wonderful community that I've gotten to know through Art of Combat. And I'm so excited to go back. And I haven't told you this actually, but the insanity has increased. We actually, two of the fighters now, I believe, have had to leave for various reasons. So originally I was cast in two of the scenes. What happens at the end of the workshop is that we culminate with two performances at the theater of various fight scenes we've been working on all week. And I was cast in Good Night Desdemona, Good Morning Juliet as Desdemona. Super excited. And then I was originally going to be in Henry VI, but then I got switched to The Outsiders.
Mm-hmm.
And since one of the other actors has left, I have now been added to a third scene.
So you're in three scenes.
I'm in three scenes.
Take lots of water and lots of food.
Oh, my goodness, yeah.
And it's insist that they give you breaks, because you're going to lose it.
It's going to be crazy. I'm now in Titus Andronicus playing Tamara.
Well, I hope they kill you fast, so you have less rehearsal.
Well, Doc did say he's going to kill me pretty fast The Outsiders, so
good.
that's good. But I'm looking forward to it. I asked to be challenged this year because, you know, coming in for the first time last year wasn't enough of a challenge. Now I just need to...
Careful what you ask for.
Yeah, rather than, you know, taking a baby step, apparently I've taken 45 steps.
Yeah. Well, maybe a baby elephant step.
Oh, there you go. Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly.
So one of the themes that I hope to do with this podcast is that I hope that my guests or my co-hosts or whoever's on, if they do sing, that they will choose a song to sing with me on the show, and sometimes even we'll include Luke in on it, and because he's got a dream one up his sleeve for a future podcast. Have you chosen a song to sing on the show today?
I have chosen a song. I just hope I can remember all the words.
We got them here.
Yes, there's words. Awesome. I chose the song from the newest Muppets. What's it called?
Life's a Happy Song.
I was going to say Everything is Perfect. That's the first line.
I think that was one of its other titles. I know it went through a bunch of titles. Yeah. Now I sound like a fool because I don't know what I'm talking about. But anyway.
So, I can't remember the title of the song.
Basically, Walter and Gary's theme.
Yes.
Alrighty.
Which is going to be super fun.
Well, thanks, Carrie, for being my co-host and asking me cool questions. Oh, and
thank you for having me here.
Thanks to you out there for listening to The Lovers, The Dreamers, and You. And I hope that you will continue to do so and join us on our website. See you soon.
Mama. Mama? Yeah. Mama. Mama! Mama! Mama, 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 mama! Mama! No! Mama! No!
Everything is great. Everything is grand. I got the whole wide world in the palm of my hand. Everything is perfect. It's falling into place. I can't seem to wipe this smile off my face. Life's a happy song when there's someone by my side to sing along. When you're alone, life can be a little low. It makes you feel like you're 3 foot tall.
When it's just you, well, times can be tough.
Yeah.
When there's no one there to catch your fall.
I'll catch you, Carrie. Everything is great. Everything is grand. I got the whole wide world in the palm of my hand. Everything is perfect. It's falling into place. I can't seem to wipe this smile off my face.
Life smells like a rose.
With someone to paint.
And someone to pose.
Life's a piece of cake.
With someone to pedal.
And someone to break.
Life is full of glee.
With someone to song.
Someone to see.
Life's a happy song. When there's someone by my side to sing along. I've got everything that I need right in front of me. Nothing's stopping me. Nothing that I can't be with you right here next to me.
Life's a piece of cake.
With someone to give.
And someone to take.
Life's a piece of pie.
With someone to wash.
And someone to dry.
Life's a piece of road.
With someone beside you to share the load.
Life is full of highs.
With someone to stir.
And someone to fry.
Life's like a lamb.
With someone there to lend a hand.
Life's a bunch of flowers.
With someone to while away the hours.
Life's a fillet of fish, hey!
Yes it is! Life's a happy song.
When there's someone by your side to sing along.
I've got everything that I need right in front of me. In me, nothing that I can't be with you right here next to me. I've got everything that I need right in front of me. Nothing's stopping me, nothing that I can't be with you right here next to me. You've got everything that you need right in front of you. Nothing's stopping you. Nothing that you can't do that the world can throw at you. Life's a happy song.
When there's someone by your side.
Life's a happy song.
When there's someone by your side.
Life's a happy song. When there's someone by your side to sing along.
Thanks for joining us at The Lovers, The Dreamers, and You. We'd love to hear from you, and you can do that at thelovers.thedreamersandyou.com or by finding us on Twitter or Facebook. This has been a Luke Bainbridge production. Be sure to subscribe on iTunes, and we'll see you next time for another edition of The Lovers, The Dreamers, and You.
Life's like a movie, write your own ending. Keep believing, keep pretending. We've done just what we've set out to do. Thanks to the lovers, the dreamers.